The backbone of my master's thesis at BYU is kind of described in this presentation, but we don't get into a whole lot of specifics, and it's still, I have to say, it's still a work in progress. So if you have any questions or concerns we don't cover in the question and answer period, please come and talk to me after. Also, I'm a graduate student, so if you have any job opportunities, I'd also like to talk to you about that. But come tap me on the shoulder. Okay. So this scene, this is an image courtesy of NASA, and it was prepared by my friend and colleague Austin Pierce. It shows part of central Utah, and this dominant mountain range here is the Wasatch Mountain Range, and we're looking at it from the east side. We have this kind of conglomerate of cities, this urban area from Provo to Lehi on the front side of the range, and then this large water body is Utah Lake. And you can almost see it, this little artery here, that's the Provo River, and if we follow it up, we end up at Deer Creek Reservoir. Deer Creek Reservoir is really important to this area. It provides drinking water, it provides hydroelectric power, it provides fishing, recreation, and it's really beautiful up there. It's also irrigation water, but it's had its problems. In the past, 30 or 40 years ago, it was classified as eutrophic, and today it's classified as a mesotrophic reservoir, so it's very sensitive to elevated nutrient inputs. So the state of Utah has done some studies, and they found that this, you can see right here, this tributary, which is called Main Creek, it contributes about 8% of the flow into Deer Creek, but close to 20% of the phosphorus load. So the state was really interested in figuring out, okay, well, where is the phosphorus coming from in this watershed area? This is called the Walsburg Watershed, and that is our study site. So they asked us through a grant to help them pinpoint phosphorus risk in this watershed. So we thought it would be really nice if you could present land managers, government officials, a program or a tool that would help predict or pinpoint phosphorus risk on a landscape given certain inputs across the whole watershed. So we set out to make this tool, the Geographic Phosphorus Risk Index, and we wanted to make it, you know, with the end user in mind, we wanted to make it easy to use. They could just plug it into their GIS, their ArcMap, drag and drop their layers, and get output that's relevant for them to go and try to solve their phosphorus problems. We want to make it modifiable because this is kind of my first shot at it. I really wanted to have the flexibility to make adjustments where needed so that we could capture the variation. You see this is a mixed-use watershed. There's some agriculture. It's not really intensive agriculture, and we have a lot of wild lands. So we wanted to capture all that variation in the watershed. And then eventually have the goal of expanding out to other watersheds and having that framework developed so that whatever watershed you go to, you can go and input your values and get a decent output that will show you where phosphorus risk is. So to test this this hypothetical model that we were going to make, we needed to have some sort of control. So we chose a phosphorus risk index. It's the Minnesota Phosphorus Site Risk Index. And this is a basic conceptual framework of how it works. There are three different pathways seen in the rows, and each pathway has an algorithm that calculates a risk attributed to that pathway, and then they are summed to an overall risk. I don't know if you guys can see it very well, but the first pathway is erosion-based, so it's particulate phosphorus or sediment-bound phosphorus that comes from soil from the soil, and it's transported by erosion vents. And then we have dissolved phosphorus transported through rainfall runoff and dissolved phosphorus transported through snowmelt. And this snowmelt pathway was really the thing that got us interested in the Minnesota Phosphorus Risk Index. Spring runoff drives water availability in Utah and in Deer Creek. So we were really interested in this snowmelt pathway. And if you look at the source for this dissolved phosphorus in the Minnesota Risk Index comes from biomass phosphorus and applied phosphorus. So we went out, just keep that in mind, we went out to roughly 60 sites. You can see we even went to a site that was outside the watershed, but that was a GPS problem. But anyways, we tried to characterize the watershed, got a lot of points, all the input values for the Minnesota Risk Index, and also going back to that that pathway three, that biomass P, we ended up doing a spin-off study where we went out to different ecotypes and are creating sort of an inventory of these ecotypes, where the phosphorus is, and living biomass, dead biomass, and then stratified through the soil. And one of the inputs needs water tractable phosphorus, so it's become a larger study than what we anticipated at the start. But with those values, those site values for each point from the Minnesota P index, we had something to compare our GIS model against. So the next step was to build the GIS model. This is one of the pathways. It shows the flow chart, how the algorithm works, how the computer calculates the risk for pathway one. These blue ellipses here are inputs. The nice thing about this model is most of the inputs you can get from publicly available data. We wanted to do that so it would be easy to use. But we had to get soils data, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later in the presentation, but the idea is that you can go out, take some soil samples, characterize your watershed, and use publicly available data and just drop it into this model, and then it can give you this sort of heat map. So how did we do? It's probably too small for you to see, but these numbers, they range from about 0 to 3, and these are the index scores at the sites that we sampled. And then we also here have the model output for the overall risk score. And in the Minnesota Risk Index, it goes from 0 to 6, or greater than 6. Greater than 6 is very high, and 0 is low. So these lighter blue colors were kind of around 1 or 2. And if you look at and compare these points, we're kind of in the same area. I went through and I compared, I'm still working on some more robust statistics, but I went through and compared at a glance each site to the specific point in the watershed, and the averages are, the means are not statistically significantly different. So it shows that there is some, that it does follow the same sort of the same general trend, but then also if you look at how, where it increases, it follows the same general trend. So it seems like we're on the right path. This is just an example of the pathway one model that I showed you the flow chart for. This is erosion, and it's sort of, this picture is relative. So these darker blue areas aren't extremely high. They're not like a 6 on the index score. The highest it gets to is about 2.5. So that's just sort of to give you an idea of what's going on. If you look close here, there's some fields that these are different cover types. So it's capturing that variation in fields. There's not a lot of you don't see a lot of risk here in the middle. A lot of those fields are perennial. Perennial hay or pasture land. So our model isn't capturing phosphorus risk associated with those areas. Here's pathway three, the snowmelt pathway, and you can see it's a lot darker. Darker is higher risk, and while it's still not really high in this watershed, it shows that pathway three is really important for calculating phosphorus risk in Walsburg. So going back to this is the overall output again. You can see that there are some hot spots, maybe some points that we might want to go in and look at and do further studies. So as far as sort of the conceptual idea behind this model, it seems like it's working. We need to take the next step to see, to test it further, run it through its through more of a rigorous test. There are some limitations with it, sort of like this the presentation before with the subsurface drainage and then the subsurface flow. Our model does not capture any of that, and we found in this particular watershed, it's interesting. It seems like the flow in subsurface flow, the phosphorus, dissolved phosphorus in groundwater is high. Where we've sampled wells, done water studies, the dissolved phosphorus coming out is almost as high as the TMDL. So that's kind of frustrating for the state. There's no stream bank erosion estimates, no irrigation-related erosion estimates either. And in the future, like I said, I'd like to do some more robust statistics and refine the model. We have another watershed that we're going to test that we have the soils data for and the Minnesota Phosphorus Risk Index data for. And then going back to this, I mentioned I talked about this a little bit, the improved soil P correlations. Austin Pierce in our lab is working on some regression analysis with different characteristics of the watershed. He's speaking on Tuesday morning, so if you get a chance to go to this talk, go and he'll talk to you more about that. But with his data, I think we can get more predictive soil P values. That's the hope, at least. And then I want to use ArcGIS Pro to make a more user-friendly interface rather than just a gray box in ArcMap. So I'd like to thank Utah, the different grants that we've received, the state of Utah. Also Brigham Young University, the students and faculty, and the Environmental Analytical Lab for running a lot of our samples. And then Neil Hansen's lab, all the students and professors that have helped us out there. Any questions?
I do have time for two or three questions. So,
yes.
What is the subsoil soil type and pH?
So most of that area, the pH tends to be a little bit higher than neutral. There's a lot of calcium limestone in the area, so the soil tends to be a little bit higher. We just followed the procedure of the Minnesota Risk Index and used Olson, so bicarbonate method. But yeah, I don't. So it let's see, it gets up to like I don't remember off the top of my head, but I think it gets up to like 8 point something.
Subsoil pH.
Oh, subsoil pH?
Yeah,
for their calcareous soil, subsoil, 7.5 pH. Not where you'd expect a lot of phosphorus to be moving through.
Yeah, the phosphorus is moving through that, through the groundwater.
Well, see, we don't, I don't know if I can say yet, but I think what we're thinking is the parent material, deep geologic formations are higher in phosphorus. I think the Geological Survey is actually going to do a study up there here soon, so we're going to let them handle that, and hopefully we can use their data.
Okay.